I had this crazy dream about some folks who love this country, who all began to dream the same dream. And when the morning came, there arose across this nation people thinking one and the same. And they awoke to find their freedoms and all their liberties had gradually been taken away. And when they realized the danger to their posterity, I heard those patriotic people say, we want this country back. We ain't just joking, Jack. We want our liberty and our dignity and our freedoms and our rights restored. We want this country back. She's been driven way off track. We're wide awake and we're madder than hell now, and we ain't gonna take it anymore. No, we're not gonna take it anymore. Remember golden days when the stars and stripes forever symbolized her glorious name, America. Now it's all been changed, and when we gaze upon old glory, it's hard to fight back feelings of shame. We're fed up with lying politicians and greedy corporations who have sold us out time and again. And we're sick and tired of sending our soldiers off to wars that we were never meant to win.
Welcome back, folks, to another edition of the Concord Lantern, being brought to you by Republic Broadcasting Network. I am your host, Maggie Rose, and we have in the wings Chris Brumbles, my co-host. Chris, you're there, right? Hailing us from the Great Northwest. He's probably on mute right now. So anyway, folks, Chris is going to be coming up and joining my guest and I a little bit later. He's going to be kind of doing some other odds and ends while he's listening to the show. And folks, this is the first time that my guest has been with us. You all remember me bringing up retired Colonel Miller, Dr. Miller, who is one of the co-founders of Fortitude Ranch. And we are going to be talking during a good portion of today's two-hour show about Fortitude Ranch. And before we get into that, I want you guys to remember when the Bill of Rights was passed in 1789 and ratified in 1791. And my 31-year-old son found the actual booklet that I gifted him, which was called The U.S. Constitution and Other Writings. Now, you can find this. It's got a picture, beautiful picture of the American flag in kind of a vertical position. You can find this usually at Costco, and they sell them anywhere from $15 to $20 a piece. It's got an introduction by Ken Mondelshein, PhD. And if you all remember, these are very important because of what's going on right now in New York and around the U.S. right now. Amendment 1, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or of the right of the people peaceably to assemble, and to petition the government for redress of grievances. Now, you all know that many times they were abridging our freedom of speech. They were telling us we had to go into roped off areas in order to be able to speak our minds. We now know that people were peacefully assembling during January the 6th, and it was actually FBI and CIA and some of their paid informants, along with Antifa and Black Lives Matter, that were actually inserting themselves into the crowd and shooting off rubber bullets and other things to stir up the crowd and upset people. So we know that was what we call a red flag event. Some people call it the beginning of some of the black swan events. We then have what Chris will be coming on with Jeff and I and talking later on in the show Amendment 2, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. And we see that going on all the time. Like we have the House Bill 2005 that has been passed in Oregon. We see what is going on with what's happening up in Washington State, and where they're telling people that now if you have any guns that have been made, you have to have a serial number embossed on it by July, or you're considered in the state of Oregon to be a felon. Right now, we're hearing also some people are being told in New York that some of these illegals, immigrants, that they're going to house them in their homes at one point or another. And many people in hotel establishments across the U.S. are being told you have to clear out all of your patrons. You cannot open up any of your rooms in hotels or motels for people that are traveling through. You have to make it available to all these illegals that the government wants to put up in these hotels and motels. So that, to me, still comes under the Third Amendment. If you're a hotel or motel owner and you're being told that you cannot open up any of your rooms to regular American citizens that are passing through or traveling through, or truck drivers that need a place to sleep for the night, or people traveling across country, you have to have all of these hotel rooms and motel rooms for these illegals from 78 different countries, 160 different countries, many of them illegals who are known to be terrorists, people that were let out of prison in Venezuela and other places around the world, and now they're crossing our borders illegally. Amendment 3, no soldier shall in time of peace be quartered in any house without the consent of the owner, nor in time of war, but in a matter to be prescribed by law. People being pulled over who've done nothing wrong, because a lot of police officers and highway patrol officers and state troopers want to be able to fill up and pull out all their little papers on their trip ticket to show up at the end of the month saying, look, these are how many tickets I gave out to get revenue for our city or for our county. And so they're pulling people over unjustly. And the judges will always listen to the law enforcement officer. They'll never listen to you. And even when you have the evidence to back up what you're saying, the judge doesn't want to hear it. So this is a violation of the Amendment 4. And many times we're seeing where they're kicking in people's doors. And then after they've already created the mayhem and the chaos, then they stand by waiting for the warrant to be signed by a judge after the fact, after what they've already done. Including even when people have been killed or the wrong people have had their door kicked in their homes. And that's Amendment number 4, the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and or the persons or things to be seized. So folks, you know, these are just some of the things that are being violated under our Constitution and our Bill of Rights. Now, as you all know, that for the last 30 years, I have been on the Concord Hour, the Concord Show, with numerous radio networks I've been on. Many of them have folded and gone by the wayside. And so then I would find a new home. And we've been talking for some time about prepping and preparing for any and all contingencies. It is not fear-mongering, folks. I've told you, many of you before, and you did not listen to me over the last 30 years when I said, look, especially in the Midwest and tornado country and hurricane country, along the coast, like what happened in Texas a few years ago, what happened in Katrina, you guys need to be prepared for anything and everything. And many of you were not. You all felt that it was, you know, for a lot of people that we were talking about warmongering. All of a sudden, when we had the pandemic hit us, we've been warning people for years that things were in the planning, that the globalists were planning a depopulation agenda. We know that our world has gone through some really scary times in the last 30 years. We've come very close to nuclear war. This so-called pandemic, now that they didn't get the sort of results they really wanted from most of the population around the world, and people are standing up and fighting back, now they have others that they are creating in, like, examples in Colorado. They're creating a new form of Ebola. Why would they want to do that? Why are they giving Ebola shots to their doctors and their nurses? Doesn't make any sense to me. Why do they have these labs in Denver, Colorado? Why do they have these labs in Texas? Why is the NIH continuing to do what they're doing, what we already knew they did with their relationship with Dr. Charles Lieber, Harvard University, Dr. Daniel Anderson out of Duke University, and now with Mark Zuckerberg and Facebook, Barack Obama, Anthony Fauci, Bill Gates were all in cahoots with Dr. Lieber and Dr. Anderson and Dr. Ralph Barak, Dr. Ralph Barak out of Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Why were they creating all these viruses and then saying, oh, look, you know, we have these strange viruses and now we're going to come up with these shots to try to take care of the viruses? Folks are waking up now and beginning to realize that these are all man-made and created. Now, folks, whether it's a solar flare, whether it's an EMP, whether it is some kind of a man-made release virus, a plandemic that is released upon the population, whether it's an economic collapse like the 1929, my dad was born that year and spent the next 10 years, he and his family living in poverty, and very difficult for them to survive. Now we find that more and more of these things are happening, taking place. And a lot of people realize that they're in communities where they don't feel safe. They don't know their neighbors that well. The neighbors don't want to get to know each other. Maybe people have very few family members, or maybe family members are spread out across the country. And you want an opportunity to be able to say, look, I'm going to have a plan A, or a plan B, or a plan C, in case something happens, whether it's an earthquake, whether it's an economic collapse. The banks are collapsing right now. On April the 8th, while I'm traveling across country, there's going to be a solar eclipse. It's going to go completely dark in Pennsylvania. It is going to be somewhat dark in the areas of Indiana and Ohio, areas that I'm going to be passing through. And some of the questions being asked right now, we've had other solar eclipses before. Why is it right now mayors and our city and local and state governments and federal government are warning people right now during this so-called solar eclipse that they need to have a 2 to 3 week supply of food and water, which people should have anyway? Why are they calling out the National Guard right now and preparing them before the 8th of April? What is it they know that we don't know, that they're not going to tell the people for fear of causing panic? Why is it that they are actually calling out the nuclear, biological, and chemical experts for this solar eclipse? Why did I get a phone call from Steve, who was running for governor in New Mexico, a former special forces military, that contacted me the other day and said, Maggie, I need you to know some things that are happening right now that they're not going to allow the mainstream media to report. Well, folks, my feeling is you should be prepared for anything and everything. It's better to have it than not need it. And with that, I would like to bring on our guest. He happens to work with Dr. Drew Miller. His name is Jeff, and I'm hoping I'm going to pronounce this right, Slowick. He is the Fortitude Ranch COO RM in Nevada. And he has a specialty in emergency preparedness. And so what we're going to be doing is talking about his background, about emergency preparedness, what he does for work as his background, a little bit about his history and emergency preparedness field. Later on, we'll probably be going into the topics of collapse, whether local, regional, national, or whether it's going to be a sudden versus a cascading event, and which events could lead up to each of those. And then the third thing we're going to be covering during this first part of the 2 hours is how ordinary citizens can prepare for local, regional, or nation's collapse events by learning from historical collapse events. And hopefully, along with Chris, we're going to be going into bugging versus bugging out, the pros and cons of both. And what are the most likely collapse scenarios that we could face in front of us in the next 5 to 25 years? And last, what types of collapse would be the worst to have to live through? Also, I'm going to be asking Jeff to present an app that he and the other managers and Dr. Miller, Colonel Miller, retired, have been sharing with us that you can actually purchase to put on your phone and it will alert you when there's certain things that we need to be aware of. Jeff, I want to welcome you to the Concord Lantern.
Hi, Maggie Rose. How are you?
Very good. Thank you for agreeing to come on. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Now, can you please share with my co-host Chris Brumbles and myself what your background? You said specialty in emergency preparedness. Let's talk about some of that and a little bit about your history in the field.
Sure, sure. So I became collapse aware in the early 2000s after Y2K. Prior to that, I had been in the Boy Scouts, which, as you know, their motto is be prepared. And that carried over to most of my life in the private sector. I've been a serial entrepreneur, so starting businesses, and unbeknownst really to myself until much later, the way that I would go about setting up my businesses and strategizing the business would be to prepare for all eventualities. Fast forward that to the early 2000s, I really became uncomfortable by the decisions that were being made by our leaders in Washington on both sides of the aisle, and knew that things could not go that way forever. At least we were not going to experience the type of life that I had experienced through the 80s and 90s with the decisions that were being made. Then really started deep diving into the preparedness community. Like most listeners out there, if they are preppers, made my first bug out bag, and I don't think I have anything left from that first purchase. A lot of preppers at the beginning just start throwing money at the problem, and that's not what the thing to do. The thing to do is to really study the history of collapses. And when I say collapse, I don't mean complete collapses. My definition of collapse is an interruption of normal life for an undetermined amount of time. And so what I do in life now is I basically look at and grade all types of collapse scenarios, from local, regional, national collapses, collapses that are sudden versus collapses that come on over time, and the types of events that lead up to each.
Go ahead. Are you there?
I am.
Yeah. So then can you kind of give us some examples of that and how you've been preparing for years?
Sure. So let me differentiate between local, regional, and national collapses to start with. A local collapse or a local interruption of normal life would be, like you mentioned earlier, a Hurricane Katrina, a Superstorm Sandy, a tornado coming through town. Those types of things interrupt your services, interrupt deliveries of food, goods to local supermarkets and stores. Then you have your regional type of occurrences. Mount St. Helens back in the 80s. I'm sure you probably remember Mount St. Helens when it erupted. I lived in Ohio at the time, and there was ash coming out of the sky. Now, I wasn't quite old enough at the time to understand the ramifications, but that would be an example, a hurricane affecting multiple states. More than one area would be another example of a regional type of interruption of normal life. And then you have a national interruption of normal life. And probably the most profound instance of that would probably be 9/11, which even to this day, we're still dealing with the ramifications, the policies put in place, and how life was changed after that. A sudden type of collapse, a sudden interruption of normal life, would be something like 9/11. Came out of nowhere. No meteorologist predicted it. No seismologist predicted it. It happened immediately. Whereas a cascading collapse is something where you do have some time to prepare. You see what's happening around you. Some might even say economically, we can see those signs right now, as well as what's happening at our southern border and the surge in crime that's being reported due to that. And basically, events that lead up to that, some could argue the events leading up to 9/11 had to do with our foreign policy. Some could argue the same with what's going on at the border. Our policies, our domestic policies, are not quite in line with common sense or what's best for the country. as far as weather goes, you know, weather is what weather is. I'm not sure that anything necessarily leads up to that. And I've not seen enough evidence regarding any type of global warming, whether that's man-made or something that's cyclical, having to do with cycles of the planet and the sun.
Okay, so when people are talking about societal collapse or an EMP, can you tell us a little bit about this app and how would the app work if our cell phones are all of a sudden knocked out?
Oh, it's not gonna. it's simply not going to work. If there's an EMP and there's a complete loss of power, that's a sudden collapse. And the worst type of collapse that could occur would be the loss of a grid. Absolutely, the loss of our electric grid would be the most catastrophic thing that could possibly happen. And I have been preparing for that as the ranch manager here in Nevada ever since I started, for the simple reason, if you prepare for the worst, anything that happens that's not up to that point, you know, you're going to be prepared for anything. As far as an EMP goes, you know, all your basic solid state electronics, transistors, and anything and everything these days are going to be affected. The best example that we have to date of an EMP actually in effect was in 1962, the Starfish Prime experiment, where a 1.45 megaton warhead was detonated 250 miles into space off the Johnson Atoll in the South Pacific. That affected 300 streetlights and phone systems in Hawaii. At that time, solid-state electronics, or transistors, basically, were nowhere near as prevalent. Really, vacuum tubes were being phased out in the mid-60s through the 70s, and now pretty much everything has transistors. So in that instance, phones would stop immediately. There is some debate whether automobiles would be functional. I've heard arguments on both sides of that spectrum. It would be the single most catastrophic thing that could happen to at least a country, assuming it only happened to one country or part of the planet that was exposed to an EMP. It would be bad times. But as far as the app goes, the app would be useless, as would anything electronic in that instance.
Can you tell us a little bit about the app for something where it would be beneficial for anything other than an EMP?
Sure. So the app gives real-time threat warnings. So if there's something happening right now, or there is, you know, a cascading event, as I alluded to earlier, it's something that you could see coming, the app would be able to warn people about what exactly is happening and going on. It also allows our members, people that are members of our ranches, to be able to start to migrate to the ranches. One of the questions I'm always asked by people is, when do I know? When do I know it's time to leave? When do I know it's time to leave home and come to the ranch, or leave home and go to my bug out location? And my answer is this: when they tell you to shelter in place, it's time to get out of Dodge. In addition to real-time threat warnings, there is an inventory feature on the app for basically being able to categorize and catalog your food prepping items. There's a collapse and prepping video section for education. And then one of the fun things about the app is that there's a collapse simulation each week, which allows you to strategize how you would get through different collapse situations. So we do a new scenario every week. The first week was a pandemic. The second week was a Civil War scenario. So it allows you to kind of get an idea of exactly what you could expect as far as what's going on around you in the event that there is a collapse.
Okay. Now, can you explain to people what you mean when you say that if the state or local governments tell you to shelter in place, why would you say that's the time to actually get out of Dodge?
Well, because they're trying to figure out what to do. And uh-huh. If they don't have something on the shelf ready, you know, a response, I use our COVID pandemic as a great example of this. And to lend a little historical perspective, the CDC has been around since the 1940s, is given billions of dollars a year in budget. And if you had gone to their website at the very beginning of the pandemic, their mission statement included something to the effect that we're here to protect the public in the event of a pandemic or similar. And they had no response. They had no liaisons with local hospitals to understand who had enough PPE. There were no liaisons with pharmaceutical yes. companies. They sat around just kind of watching and waiting to see what would happen. So that's what I mean. When you're told to shelter in place, it's different than somebody saying, start heading east because there's a tsunami. Get out of town. If there's a tsunami getting ready to hit the west coast of the United States, they're going to tell you to get out of town. They're going to tell you to start in an orderly fashion moving east. When they say to shelter in place, they don't have enough information to know what's going on, or the incompetence of the bureaucracy is basically keeping the decision makers from being able to do what they're paid to do. I don't know if that's the greatest example, but that's why I tell, you know, our members, when you're told to shelter in place, that's when you get on the road. The roads are going to be empty. You know, if everybody's sheltering in place, you have a clear path to get to where you need to go. It takes some time for roadblocks to get put up, if that would be in the cards. It takes usually 24 to 48 hours to be able to limit movement because there's coordination there. And as libertarians, we tend to think that we tend to give a lot more credit, I think, to the local and federal governments than they are probably deserving of. To everyone's detriment.
Okay. Now, not everybody that are members of each of your ranches around the country are libertarians. You have people coming from all different ideologies and walks of life and professional backgrounds, right?
That is correct. We welcome everybody.
Okay. And there is a membership fee per person per year, right?
Yes, there's an upfront fee to join, and then there are quarterly and annual fees after your first year of membership. Essentially, how it works is each member chooses what level of accommodation that they want. Those accommodations can either be shared with other people or they can be completely private. Essentially, what we do is we provide everything that somebody would need in order to survive a collapse. My goal is for a two-year for a two-year resolution of a collapse. Either the best estimates in the worst case scenario, which would be a grid down, would be a loss of around 90% of American lives within 12 months. Being the person I am, I like to double everything. So my goal is to maintain enough food, clean water, energy, things along that line to last at least 24 months. I can only speak for our ranch. But each ranch is set up somewhat differently. Our ranch is 100% off-grid. We are essentially a working farm. We have a permaculture specialist. We have a construction manager. We raise sheep. We raise chickens. We raise cattle. We grow crops. All against the day that is needed for our members.
Okay. Now, how many of there are there ranches right now that are up and running throughout the U.S.?
Right now, we have seven ranches. In addition to Nevada, we have a ranch in Texas, Colorado, Wisconsin, Tennessee, New York, and West Virginia.
Could you give those that list once again, please?
Sure. Nevada, Texas, Colorado. I'm sorry, I may have forgotten Wisconsin, Tennessee, West Virginia, and New York.
Okay. Now, when you're talking about New York, you're probably talking about upper state New York, like up in the Catskills.
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. And then the acreage of each of these averages about how many acres apiece?
It's different for each. I believe our Nevada location is the largest at around 150 acres. But it varies based upon geography.
And okay, what was available. We're going to go to break, Jeff. We'll be right back. Don't go away, folks.
You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home.
Email Tom at republicbroadcasting.org. T-O-M at republicbroadcasting.org.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email ProudSouthern123 at gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read a few highlights. Extendivite works in keeping my blood pressure in the normal range. I have been using Extendivite for many years. Great product. I use regularly and I rarely get sick. This product has relieved what appeared to be angina pain in my chest and shortness of breath after climbing stairs. I'm quite happy about it. My husband, son, and I have been using this product for a few months now, and we have noticed an improvement in our joints and blood pressure. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Welcome back, folks. I am Maggie Rose, and you're listening to the Concord Lantern here live on RBN, Republic Broadcasting Network. And we've got Chris Brumbles, my co-host in the wings, and we're talking to Jeff. Jeff, am I pronouncing your last name correctly? Is it Slowick?
You nailed it, Maggie. Thank you.
Okay. He is the manager of Fortitude Ranch in Nevada, working very closely with one of the co-founders, Dr. Colonel Miller, a retired Dr. Miller, and he's just told us there's numerous Fortitude Ranches throughout the U.S. They're in Colorado, they're in Texas, Wisconsin. I think you said there's also in New York as well as Tennessee. Is there one in Kentucky right now, or has that one already been started?
No, not as of yet. We do not have a Kentucky location.
Okay. So for people that are interested, you said that generally, and some people have written to me and they said, Maggie, being that I am at least 10 to 11 hours drive from the Nevada location, and I am at least a 2-day drive from Texas, how can ordinary citizens prepare for local, regional, or nation's collapse events by learning from historical collapse events, is what you had said. So you had said that you could actually cover how ordinary citizens can prepare. This person says, wouldn't it be better for me to hunker down in the area that I know and that I'm familiar with, even if I don't know my neighbors and I can't trust my neighbors?
So that's a question that we get a lot. And whether or not you should hunker down or leave is entirely dependent on the type of scenario that we are talking about. Something like a tornado or a hurricane, if your home's not affected, then of course, you know, as long as you have enough food and water and you feel secure, you can absolutely stay where you're at. The tipping point for me between whether you should stay where you are, and this depends on whether you live in a city or a populated area, or whether you need to really look at going somewhere else. As I mentioned earlier, I tend to plan for the absolute worst so that anything that's not as bad as that is covered. The absolute worst thing that can possibly happen in a collapse is the loss of our food delivery system, the loss of the ability of to refrigerate food. In those instances, you're going to look at, then you have to look at how long is this situation going to last. Now, if it's a hurricane or something local, probably not long enough to really have to worry about too much. As long as you have 3 to 5 days worth of food, I feel that you're going to be okay. In a worst case scenario, like a complete collapse of the electrical system of our grid, that is a whole different animal. And to understand what would happen there, you would actually have to look historically at what happens during times of starvation and famine. I can point to three specifics. In the 1930s, rural Ukraine, most of the food was taken to the cities by Stalin. And there are several books describing the what happened to those people in rural Ukraine in the 1930s. The Jewish people in World War II, that in the Warsaw Ghetto, starved. Again, some very good books. And there's a book I want to recommend after this, after I tell you this third one, which was Chinese Famine Under Mao. All three examples of starvation. And the thing that you have to understand about starvation is that there is no one way that people respond to that. People in the beginning stages of starvation, obviously, with a family, are going to do whatever they have to do to procure food. They will steal, lie, beg, murder. All of those things are on the table. After a human being has not had food for a week or two, they become withdrawn. They seem to become disinterested in just about most everything in life. That is completely different type of person that you have to deal with at that point. What I tell preppers, regardless of what you are prepping for, food is the very first thing that you need to make sure that you have enough of. 2,000 to 3,500 calories a day for 12 to 24 months at a baseline. And then you go from there. If you have 6 firearms and 8,000 rounds of ammunition and you have a 30-day supply of food, I would argue that your priorities are probably not in the correct place, not where they should be. So what we can understand historically is the very worst thing that can happen in a collapse is starvation, and that's what we plan accordingly for. Everything else, if it was a starvation situation and I lived in a city, I would be out of that city in a heartbeat. If it was something that I thought was going to be over within a week or two, I would probably stay at home. Although the person that I am, because I have a place to go, better safe than sorry, because we don't know what we don't know. And something that starts off as something that seems relatively local or regional in nature, through incompetence or unpreparedness by people that don't answer directly to us can turn into something longer in nature.
Now, when we're talking about how citizens can prepare for local, regional, or nation's collapse, and we've learned from historical events that you just brought up regarding Mao, regarding what happened in World War II, we happen to know that a few years ago, we had something in Oregon called the Sugar Pine Mine Operation, where these miners had all of a sudden, you know, struck gold in their gold mine. And all of a sudden, the feds decided, because they'd created basically all the land around them was owned by the Bureau of Land Management or the Department of Forestry. So the feds go, oh, good. You know, these people are like an island. They have struck gold. We're going to go in and we're going to kick them off their own land and take over. And with the Sugar Pine Mine Operation, people came from all over the country to defend these gold miners and the little plot of land that was in the center of the federal jurisdiction. And one of the things we found out is one of the gals, her name was Mary, and she was working with a Joseph Rice, who was the coordinator at the time of Oath Keepers for Grant, for that area in Grants Pass, Oregon. It was called Josephine County. And she was supposedly his public relations officer. And she went around asking many of the volunteers that came from around the country, oh, what is your name? And are you guys preppers? And how have you prepped? And what supplies do you have? And we found out later that she actually worked for the Federal Emergency Management, the FEMA. And so many people were very upset because they had been hearing and reading where the last few presidents of the United States, like Clinton, Obama, and the Bushes, had actually signed things giving FEMA the right to go into people's homes. And if they have any water or food stored up for their family, whether it's for a week, 2 weeks, or 3 weeks, they can somehow legally, under these so-called executive orders, take away your food and water and go take it somewhere else. How would people be able to defend themselves against something like this?
That's a great question, Maggie Rose. The first thing is, the first rule of prepping is to don't tell anybody you're a prepper. The second rule is to make sure that you don't keep all of your eggs in one basket. One of the things about Fortitude Ranch, since our members do have their own private accommodations, is that they are able to stockpile things here as opposed to keeping everything at home. How would somebody go about this if they're not a member of a community such as ours? Well, there are several ways that you can do this. You can stash it around your property. You can take and cache some things at friends' houses or somebody that you know that's maybe a couple of hours away. You could have a storage unit somewhere close by. That type of event, you should be able to see coming if you pay attention to, you know, what happens in life. If you're not the type of person that really bothers to really kind of be aware of what's happening around you, I don't know that there's anything you're going to be able to do when somebody from the government shows up at the door and wants to take what you've got.
Wow. Okay. So what is the difference in your estimation of the definition of bugging in versus bugging out, and what are the pros and cons?
So bugging in means staying in place. And you know, the prepping industry is like a lot of other industries. There are people in it for a quick buck. There are people that are giving strong opinions that haven't studied or been through the types of situations that they are helping people with. There's two books, if I may, before I answer your question. Survival Theory 2 by Jonathan Hollerman deals with the starvation aspect, as I was speaking before. And he does a really great job, gives some really good advice. He's ex-Air Force SEER instructor, and he really gets it. He gets it. Also, there's another book by a gentleman named Selko Begovic. It's The Dark Secrets of SHTF Survival, The Brutal Truth About Violence, Death, and Mayhem. He lived in the Balkan region in 1992 through 95. He lived one entire year in a city without electricity, fuel, running water, distribution of food or goods, or any kind of organized law or government. That is an excellent book if somebody is planning on bugging in for them to read to see exactly what they could expect. the biggest thing is that is this. If you're going to bug in and you live in a populated area and there is not going to be any rule of law, that's not a great thing. That would definitely be something that would cause me to want to bug out. Now, people that aren't part of a community, that don't have a family member in a rural area, how do they do this? There's a couple of ways. The first way is to, and I'm not endorsing this, this is, you know, the preferable thing is to team up with family members and friends in a rural area. That's number one. Number two would be, and it takes some planning ahead of time, is to see what kind of vacation rentals are corporate owned. In a rural area that would be within 1 to 3 hour drive. Those types of vacation properties, again, that are corporate owned, are probably going to remain empty during any type of serious collapse. Anybody that might be vacationing there is probably going to head out to go back home to check on their loved ones. So, I mean, if worse came to worse and you had to squat, I guess you would squat, you know. There is no great answer for surviving something that makes you have to leave home unless you've consciously made an effort to prepare for that. And not everybody can afford that. So then what you're left with is you have to think about your morals and what you're willing to compromise morally if you have to in order for you and your family to be safe.
Could you please give us the spelling of these authors again? You said one of them was Dark Secrets of Survival. Could you spell his first and last name for us, please?
Sure. It's Sierra Echo Lima Charlie October is the first name. Bravo Echo Gamma October Victor Indigo Charlie would be the second last name. Okay, and that's Dark.
And his first name is Seco, S-E-C-O?
No, ma'am. Sierra Echo Lima Charlie October.
Okay.
So,
okay, and then the first book you mentioned was what?
The first book was Survival Theory 2 by Jonathan Hollerman.
Okay.
And then there's also a third book, which is a good read too. Actually, Colonel Miller wrote this one. It's called Rohan Nation, and that basically takes you years after the collapse and actually how societies might reinvent themselves after a complete collapse. So that's a good read. You know, we tend to have a lot of people in this industry that are doom and gloom and everything is scary. And the thing is, the whole thing about preparing is this: it takes away the fear. If you know that you have 6 months, a year's worth of food, you have a place to go, you have people you can trust, that mitigates a lot of that fear and a lot of that uncertainty. I tell, you know, my members that, you know, when they say, well, when you say to leave, you know, you're telling us to come to the ranch when the government says to shelter in place. Well, what if that passes? And what I tell them is this: then you got practice getting here under stressful situations.
Right. Yeah. Right. So now what are the most likely collapse scenarios in the next 5 to 25 years? If you had a crystal ball, you and Colonel Miller and others, you have a lot of people involved in many of your Fortitude ranches around the country that are former military. Many of them have been overseas. Many of them have seen what the CIA has been involved in actually toppling governments in order to put up their own puppet regimes. We see the chaos going on in Haiti right now. So what would you consider here in the United States of America the most likely collapse scenarios in the next 5 to 25 years?
I think first and foremost is going to be cyber or physical attacks on our infrastructure, on our water, on our grid. I find it very unlikely that nation states like Russia, China, North Korea, Iran, although I'm sorry, I misspoke. Put North Korea out of that. Iran. Our globalist economy is so intertwined that if the United States economy were to collapse, which it would due to a grid down situation, an attack on something that catastrophic, everybody's economy is going to collapse, with the exception of North Korea. They don't really have an economy to start with. The Metcalf Power Station attack in California, I believe that was 2012. I could be wrong on the date. That was a physical attack on a substation by multiple assailants with military-grade firearms. We still have no idea who perpetrated the attack, but the general consensus is that it was a dry run for the future. And then we've had a lot of, whether it is coincidence or not, which I don't really believe in, we've had a lot of fires in the last couple of years at food processing plants. So I really feel that cyber and physical attacks, because they can be carried out by people, either lone wolves or cells, for, you know, maybe people that are theologically driven to cause chaos and disorder, people theologically driven to violence, don't really care about economies. They care about their supreme being and following whatever doctrines are set forth with that. But definitely the easiest, the lowest hanging fruit are going to be cyber and physical attacks on infrastructure. Going down the list would be a pandemic. Obviously, we've already had a dry run on something like that. Minnesota just reported its first case ever of the H5N1 bird flu. Dr. Miller is very convinced that that is going to be the thing that does it. That's something that we'll have to see. I try never to be too judgmental on what people think is going to happen regarding an interruption of normal life, for the simple reason that, you know, anything is possible. Going on down the list, domestic terrorism leading to martial law. I think this is probably most apropos when it comes to what's happening on our border. If things get bad enough in our cities, I can see right now I feel we're a population of people that wait for other people to come along and fix things rather than taking care of problems ourselves. So obviously the thing that would be the shortest way to curbing continued violence would be just to make sure that nobody's on the street. Going out a decade or more, artificial intelligence obviously is a worry, simply because as human beings, we've shown our greatest propensity is to try to exert dominion over our environment or the people around us. So that part of human nature, I don't think you can ever really discount.
Okay. So then basically you think the worst type of collapse would be the loss of our infrastructure and our power grid?
Yep. Yeah, okay. That is by far the most life-changing. It's going to change life for everybody immediately. I don't care if you live in Boise, Idaho, or Cape Coral, Florida, or Bangor, Maine. Everybody is going to be affected by that. And that kind of collapse is going to get bad very quickly.
Now, we're hearing stories that Justin Trudeau, the love child between his mother and Fidel Castro, has been allowing the Red Chinese Party, the Communist Party, their army to be training up in the National Forest of Canada, especially in British Columbia, between Alaska and Washington State, you know, our border to the north. We're also hearing that the Chinese are threatening that they would have no problem making an invasion on all of our ports, like in Seattle, Washington, Portland, Oregon, Albany, Oregon, San Francisco, and up and down the West Coast. You don't see a Red Dawn scenario as being one of those concerns?
I think that the way that comes about is if Chinese or another foreign entity works to exert influence in this country with our next election. Whether that be paying off postal workers to replace ballots that they've absentee ballots that they've picked up somewhere, whether it is buying people off. The truth of the matter is, boots on the ground is very difficult. It's easy for me to imagine after something like a grid down situation after 6 to 12 months, because we're going to pretty much wind up destroying ourselves. The one thing that no nation wants to have to do in America is have to rebuild all the electricity, all of the highways. They don't want to have to repair a ton of destruction that's occurred. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense. What makes more sense to me anyway, if I were going to do that, is to create a situation where people had to fight each other for survival, and then step on in, exert my influence at that point. And you're right, they're going to go after ports because they're going to have to secure ports in order for their container ships and their troops to be able to make landfall. But like I said earlier, just a few moments ago, Maggie Rose, I don't discount what you're saying. Anything is possible. That's why we prepare, and that's why we prepare for the worst, so that should that happen, we have the food, and hopefully we're in a remote enough location that we can get a clear picture of what's happening and plan accordingly.
Okay, now can you give people an idea of where they can write to or who they can contact if they want more information about Fortitude Ranch?
Absolutely. FortitudeRanch.com is our website. And the name of our app is called Collapse Survivor. You are not able to get to Fortitude Ranch through that app. However, I neglected to name that to give you the name of the app earlier, for which I apologize. But FortitudeRanch.com, you can always email me or call me directly. I have no problem with you putting my contact information on the platform after the show for people to get a hold of me. I'm happy to answer questions. My time is a bit limited because in addition to running this ranch, I am the COO of the company, so I have a lot of corporate duties. But I'm always happy to take out 45 minutes to speak with somebody, even if they just have questions about how to prep.
Okay. And then one of the other concerns, somebody just wrote, we're going to go to a break here in a minute, but somebody wrote, maybe you can cover this more when we come to the other side of the hour. They're concerned that a lot of people have been going to Idaho, which would be ground zero, that if the federal government or the United Nations or the World Health Organization wanted to crush the conservatives or the Christian community, they're worried that there would be drones flying overhead, like let's say the Nevada Fortitude Ranch, and that they could end up taking out people from the air. What kind of protections can people have for something like that?
Nothing. I mean, listen, if somebody shows up with a Spectre gunship, or a drone, and they're you know, it's a government entity. Look, there is no Red Dawn scenario here. Maybe 30 years ago, when there wasn't such a technological disadvantage. Although the caveat to that is very well and alive in Iraq and Afghanistan. I mean, it is, if you know your topography enough, and if you stick to. I'll come back to this after break.
Sounds good. Folks, we're listening to Jeff Slowick. He is the CEO and the ranch manager at Fortitude Ranch in Nevada, one of many sites around the country. We'll be right back. I'm your host, Maggie Rose. Your co-host, Chris Brumbles, is in the wings, and you're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network.
We want our liberty and our dignity and our freedoms and our rights restored. We want this country back. She's been driven way off track. We're wide awake and we're madder than hell now. And we ain't gonna take it anymore. No, we're not gonna take it anymore. Now we know our cause is right. And our victory's on the way. And we won't give up the fight till we hear 200 million say, we want this country back. We ain't just joking, Jack.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we the people are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site, It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today because you can handle the truth.